Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, as ever, and I'm joined again by my regular partner in crime for this episode. It's a welcome back to Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
Back for more Tombs action.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about this.
Because you did Squeeze right at the very beginning of the X-Cast. We recorded that something like just before Christmas, I think it was.
I know, and bloody hell, and it's almost the end of May now.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's taken that long to get through season one, but we're nearly towards the end of season one. This is the last few episodes. And we've come a long way, haven't we, already?
Yeah, it's been a fun couple of months, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It has. It's exciting. There's a massive mountain still to climb, but it's exciting to get to an episode like Tombs, because this is the first and one of not many really sequels in the X-Files. So let's get stuck in, shall we, and discuss Tombs. Tombs is the 21st episode of the first season of The X-Files. It originally aired on April 22nd, 1994, was written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, and directed by David Nutter. The story sees Eugene Victor Tombs, the limb-stretching serial killer who Mulder previously captured, as he is released from prison and set free in order to continue his reign of mutant terror.
These murders span nearly a century. 19 homicides, 5 occurring every 30 years since 1903, all in the Baltimore area. In each case, the liver was extracted and presumably eaten. A trophy was taken from each victim, many of which were found in the living quarters of Eugene Tombs at 66 Exeter Street. Records show that a Eugene Tombs has resided at that same address since 1903. The same year a man was murdered in that building. Besides the liver extraction, the most notable element connecting these cases is the undetermined point of entry. Many of the victims were found with their windows and doors locked from the inside. These elongated fingerprints found at 7 of the 19 crime scenes match Eugene Victor Tombs.
Agent Mulder, look at his fingers. Look at him. 100 years
old. I contend that perhaps through a genetic mutation, Eugene Tombs is capable of contorting and elongating his body in order to gain access to victims so that he may extract the livers which provide him sustenance for the hibernation period of 30 years. He needs one more victim to complete this cycle.
Your Honor.
A preliminary exam done at the time of Tombs' arrest revealed abnormalities in his striated muscles and axial bones. His attorney blocked further study.
Thank you, Agent Mulder.
I ask you to place the safety
Counsel?
Of the people first
no
and foremost.
Questions.
This is a rare
Agent
and abnormal
Mulder.
Human creature
Agent
who should not
Mulder.
Be released but retained for further study.
You may step down.
If you release Eugene Tombs, he will kill again. It's in his genetic makeup.
Okay. Out of 10, then, Andrew, what do you give Tombs?
You know what? I'm going to be a bit... I feel like a bit of a traitor, actually. So I remember when we recorded Squeeze, and I was so excited, and I loved Squeeze, and I was really excited to record this. But you know what? Like we say, there's been a few months, and so I've just watched Tombs kind of on its own as an episode. Mm. And as a solo episode, it ain't that good. Mm. It's not crap by any means. So, you know, I wouldn't give it the... I can't remember. I think I gave Squeeze like a 9. This 7, I think. Not shit, not at all, but there's definitely some issues with this episode as a solo outing.
What do you think in brief then pulls it down really from Squeeze? Because without going into detail, I would agree with you actually. I don't think it's as good as Squeeze.
It seems to be missing a lot of the atmosphere that Squeeze had. And obviously, because we spoke when we were talking about Squeeze, the director never came back for another episode of The X-Files. So obviously, there was a different director for this episode. So you can definitely tell there's two different guys' styles in there. Mm. But obviously, you know, it was a regular that came back for this one. And there are some really bizarre leaps in this episode as well. Like, kind of, you know, I sat and watched it and went, why did they do that? Mm. There were a couple of bits that really made me look and go, why do I love this episode so much?
Yeah.
I definitely think it's... There's definitely, for the biggest issue, I think there's definitely a lot of the atmosphere of the first episode is missing.
Yeah, I do think I agree, actually. I think it's funny because when you do watch Tombs as part of the, you know, the two-parter, essentially, just separated by 17 episodes or whatever it is, It feels like a different experience when you watch them back to back. You know, I remember when, you know, they first came out on VHS, didn't they, in the 90s, and they were on a two-part, you know, on a tape together. And, you know, separate. And it was watching them then, he's much more of a, it's almost like a film almost, a 90-minute film. But when you separate the two and you have a bit of distance, Tombs, it is lacking something. And I think atmosphere is pretty right. I would give it a 7 as well, which people, you know, I think people would look back and think Tombs is higher than that. But it's funny because it should be, really. In theory, it should be.
Yeah, completely. I sat there, like I say, I was all ready to watch it and I was really excited to sit and watch it, remembering it to be, you know, the 9 that I gave Squeeze. And I went, well, hold on. This ain't right.
Yeah.
I remember this being much better than this.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. You do remember it that way. You're right that he had a different director. This has got David Nutter back, who did some of the best, actually, season 1 episodes. He directed Ice. He directed Beyond the Sea. He did Lazarus as well, which, despite not being quite as good as those others, he's actually quite well directed. You know, so he's, and he did quite a few good ones in season 2 and then season 3 as well. And, you know, David Nutter's one of the most famous TV directors and one of the best TV directors going. You know, he's directed everything, you know, even so far as up to the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones.
Didn't he do the pilot for Millennium as well?
He did, yeah. He's done loads of pilots. He's directed things for like Smallville, The Sopranos, ER. You know, he's done loads of pilots. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, look at Millennium's one of the best pilots I think I've ever seen. That, you know, that episode all on its own is absolutely terrifying.
Absolutely,
he's a great director. Which actually, it makes the fact that I didn't like this episode quite so much even more surprising.
Well, it's funny as well because there were several reasons why Tombs came to be. And one of the big things was they wanted to correct the mistakes of the last director. You know, Harry Longstreet, we talked about in Squeeze, how he didn't come back because they basically kicked him off because he was acting like a dick, by all accounts. But Glenn Morgan, who co-wrote the episode, said that this was a real chance to correct that part of it and do some of those things that were cut out of the first episode. And once they decided on Tombs, to do a sequel to Tombs, then they worked backwards from that point and decided that they would want to do a Tombs episode properly. And the irony is that actually, even though Squeeze had a troubled production history, there's just something about the way that ended up coming out that's creepier, which is really weird.
It's a bizarre turn of events, really, isn't it? You're trying to try to fix what you thought was broken and make a worse episode.
They came up for this because Glenn Morgan was out shopping at a mall at Christmas, and he saw men working on an open escalator, and he started to think about the scare factor of an urban myth involving a monster underneath an escalator in a shopping mall. You know, a classic X-Files idea of taking the mundane and the usual that we're familiar with and putting something horrific in it. Chris Carter says that as the season was coming to an end, we thought, how would we like to scare people again in the same way as Tombs? And then they went, well, why don't we just bring Tombs back? Because he didn't die. So, and fans had loved Tombs, so they were like very, very excited at the idea that he would come back. Did you know about the alternate script for a sequel? Before this was created, there was a script sent to 20th Century Fox called Dark He Was and Goldeneyed. I presume Goldeneye, not in the James Bond sense. And it was written by none other than Doug Hutchison, who played Tombs. He said, I wanted to figure out a way to have him around forever. I'm not fucking surprised. Didn't work. So he said, in my script, Tombs was an experiment to find out how I could remain so young and immortal. He was infused with a drug that backfired and ended up escaping the asylum that he starts in the episode. So this is typical.
Okay.
Doug Hutchinson's an oddball. He said, now he's eating livers like M&Ms. He's on a rampage. I also dealt with where Tombs might have come from, and apparently the script suggested that Tombs was the incarnation of a liver-eating, ravenous Central American Indian god. So he said the script had a lot of flashbacks, and Tombs talked a lot at the end because Scully and I had a confrontation. It sounds awful. And
that dude had some real delusions of grandeur, didn't he?
It's one of those things where an actor thinks he can write as well as act. I mean, you know, I'll take nothing away from Doug Hutchinson. He's really good as Tombs, but that's because he says fuck all for most of it. You know, I think if you had him talking all the way through, it would completely destroy the character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a monster, isn't he? In this episode and won the one before. You know, he doesn't need to sit and have a chat with anybody about anything.
Exactly. You know? Apparently, though, because of the laws in terms of unsolicited scripts never even being read, that Fox just sent it in back and said, the lawyers went, well, we can't even read this, mate, because, you know, you're not on staff, so waste of time. So they, I think if Chris Carter had read it, he'd have politely gone, Thingy's dog, it's not really what we're looking for, but, you know.
Yeah, I think he'd have been lucky to get a polite response as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So hold on a sec, Doug. You want me to do a show where you're a god? No.
And immortal, so you can come back every other episode and get paid.
Yeah,
I know what you're up to, mate. You know, it's that thing. You just want to keep yourself in work. Yeah, ultimately they ended up going with their other idea. But interestingly enough, the FBI conspiracy element, which we will talk about when we break down the episode, wasn't an original plan. It was suggested by Fox because they thought that we'd reached a point in the first season that we needed to return to the conspiracy storyline or have that cooking underneath. Because, you know, they hadn't done, apart from EBE, there hadn't been much done regularly with that. There'd been episodes about aliens, but they hadn't really got into the FBI stuff for quite a while, really. So it was their chance to introduce Skinner, which we'll get to. So, yeah, there's some interesting stuff as well. They were also told, Morgan and Wong, don't write anything where we're outdoors. Because if you look at the episode, there's very few exteriors. Most of it's indoors. Yeah. And it's because they had real problems shooting Darkness Falls, which we talked about in that episode last week, which is all about how they had bad weather conditions and all kinds of things. So R.W. Goodwin said, Glenn Morgan said, Bob Goodwin called me up and said, you know those keys on your typewriter that spell EXT for exterior? Yeah, they're now broken.
Fair enough. I suppose, they would have been filming February, you know, January, February, March kind of time for those episodes, wouldn't they? They would have been cold and wet and really shit.
Exactly. So they made a point of making sure this episode was as much indoors as they possibly could so they could counterbalance. So interesting stuff behind it. So let's get into the episode and break it down, shall we? Okay, so the teaser begins and we're with Toombs pretty quickly. I thought straight away there was a sense of ominous build-up towards us seeing Toombs. There's a lot of like pans across, slow pans across, sounds of people screaming in the asylum, lots of shadows, and then you get the camera hit Eugene Victor Toombs before we even see him. You know, it's his name on the door. It's just like he's back.
It's kind of set up in that kind of way, though, isn't it, where you look at it and you go, should I know this?
Yeah.
You know, because obviously we're talking like 17, 18 episodes between the two episodes. And when, you know, when you see the name and when you see him, you go, oh, yeah, of course, it's from the end of Squeeze.
Mm.
You know, and I'm almost certain, I don't remember if I watched this when it was on the TV, but I'm almost certain if I had done, I'd have had the same reaction to everybody else, go, oh, he's back.
If you didn't know, because obviously back then we wouldn't have known, because it was before the days of internet and spoilers and whatnot, so it would have probably been a genuine surprise that he was coming back. I think one of the things that all through this episode really, but in this teaser was really apparent, is how much, in terms of the music, how much Toombs has his own distinctive kind of theme. It's like a strained, offbeat sort of rhythm, like almost like a weird, twisted heartbeat, I think, sometimes. Not many other monsters get their own kind of musical sort of theme in this show, and Toombs has got one. There's a very distinctive thing that Mark Snow does.
Yeah, they make him a very important kind of monster, don't they? He's not rolled in with the rest of them just a monster this week's episode.
Yeah, exactly.
They've given him something just a little bit special to make him stand out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why it's also ominous and, you know, build up, and then what I liked was the suggestion that he can break out whenever he wants. Because when his hand comes out and it's going towards the handle, and then he doesn't leave. But I just thought, are they trying to say that he could go whenever he wants? He's just choosing not to.
I always did kind of think, though, every time I've watched it, I've gone, but why didn't he? You know, no one chooses, no one volunteers to sit in that little room. If you have the ability to get out, why are you just playing with the door lock and then going back in your room?
Because he was building the nest at the end of Squeeze, wasn't he? But that was never going to stay there. They weren't just going to let him hibernate for 30 years in a cell. Oh, and go, oh, that's Toombs' cell. Don't go. Yeah, we'll leave him. He's fine.
We'll just leave him be for 30 years.
Yeah, just leave that cell.
Never going to happen.
Well, go. Don't worry about it till 2023. It's fine. There's a few little contrivances. I mean, the whole thing of how they kind of, not retcon, but they kind of skirt around the fact that by now Toombs really should have probably been prosecuted, and he isn't. You know, this. Yeah. It's very much like he's just kind of been almost on remand for this long. You think, well, hang on a minute, right? He did try and kill Scully. He's at least, you should at least be able to do him for attempted murder, you know, or with, you know, even if there's no direct sort of evidence, there's fucking testimony. I just think they do take a liberty there. And so when you get this Dr. Monty guy turn up, who's got to be one of the most blithering idiots I've ever seen on this show.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's painful to watch as well, considering the actor that's playing him I quite like, actually.
It's Paul Benvictor, isn't it? He's been in loads of things, hasn't he?
Yeah. I don't know what it's like with you, but in our house, he's like most famous for being in Entourage in season 2, I think, of The Wire.
Yeah. Dr. Monty is a knob because he's just like...
Yes, he is.
He just completely sort of buys into Toombs. I mean, the thing, all the way through, I'm thinking, how are you all not thinking he's fucking weird?
You walk into the guy's cell and he's licking bits of newspaper and lobbing it against the wall. But the professional psychologist thinks he's okay.
Yeah, oh, he's fine. He's, you know, he's okay.
We should all hope to get that guy if we ever do something stupid.
Yeah, it's fine. He may have killed people. He is licking newspaper and making a nest, but he's fine. Release him. He's okay. It's ridiculous, but it does allow for one of the most chilling things. The most chilling crossed fingers I've ever seen in my life. When Toombs crosses his fingers, I was like, oh.
It's really weird, and at the same time, it's kind of really. That seems, even for like early 90s, that seems a bit cheesy.
Well, yeah. And do you know what's funny? And I've made a note of this. One of the things about Toombs, and possibly the reason that it doesn't work as well as Squeeze, is because all the way through, there is a certain sort of black comedy to it. And there's a certain kind of little tongue-in-cheek that everybody knows that this is a sequel. And everybody who's watched this knows about Squeeze, so that you can in-joke a couple of times. And there is a little bit of a feeling that they're sort of taking the piss a bit. And I thought this at several points. There's a few points. And I don't know quite why, really.
Do you think maybe the guys making it weren't trying to be funny, more along the lines of just taking the piss out of the guy that had been fired for being an arsehole making the previous episode?
Could be. I don't know. But tonally, sometimes the balance is off where it wasn't with Squeeze. So we're at the teaser, and we're into the main, and immediately, Skinner!
Yep.
Straight away, first appearance ever of Mitch Pileggi as Skinner, as Walter Skinner. And obviously, the Smoking Man, we haven't seen him for a while, as the Smoking Man. He was in an episode a few weeks ago called Young at Heart, and we discussed whether or not he might be the Smoking Man, but the probability is he wasn't. So we haven't seen the Smoking Man for a while, so... Skinner's very antagonistic straight away, isn't he, with Scully here?
It's a very cool way, because I forgot, actually, that we'd got to this point before we saw him. And it's a very cool way to have him start off, obviously, with the Smoking Man behind him. Just Skinner not attacking, not saying anything to him, so we know there's some kind of connection between the two.
Mm.
And with him, the first time you see him, he's bollocking someone.
Mm.
I quite like that. I quite like that they've made him this strong character, but at the same time, there's something going on with, you know, the powers that be.
Yeah.
I when you watched it this time around, it was a really nice introduction, actually. I'd never seen it like that before. I really liked that.
Well, we've talked before, haven't we, about how they struggled throughout the first season to really give Mulder and Scully a really good boss figure.
Yeah.
You know, they had cuddly old Blevins, and then they had sort of terse McGrath, who they didn't bother with again. And then you get Skinner, and immediately he works. Immediately, the actor works, the character works. He's so different in this episode from almost every other time we see him. Because it's only, and we will get to this later, but it's only at the very, very last moment of this episode when we see him, do we see a hint of Skinner as we know him. All the way through, he is a real bastard. He's a really... Yeah. Defensive, angry, antagonistic, I want you out of this FBI. The way he talks to Mulder and Scully is very different and very interesting. With Scully, he tries to manipulate her into, you know, not being able to defend the X-Files work. And what I like the way she quotes statistics back at him. You know, I thought that was good. But she says, well, actually, we have solved this amount of cases.
And we have a better success rate than everybody else.
Yeah. Even though half of our files are the fucking aliens,
yeah,
we can arrest more people. And then he says something like, you know, that's your only saving grace. And it's like, well, is it? I mean, the thing is, it doesn't save them eventually, does it? I mean, in a few weeks, no. When the X-Files is shut down, that's not really mentioned.
It's really good, though, to have him. He's a really... And this is like we were saying before about, like you say, the guys that they couldn't quite get somebody to be a good boss, a convincing boss for us. And the thing with Skinner is, I think it's his size.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mean, look at the dude. He's terrifying. Yeah. You know, it looks like you've got a boxer on the other side of the table. And you're going to want to cower behind the chair if he's bollocking you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing with Skinner. He's a big, obviously, you know, he's forceful and he's, you know, he is a boss. He is their boss. But he looks like he should be their boss as well. And yeah. You will just cower before me.
And as we see later on in the show, he can throw a punch or two as well. And that they use Skinner's brute force brilliantly quite often in the show later. But even sitting down, I don't think he even stands up very much in this episode. He maybe stands up once. He's mostly at the desk, and you have that imposing sense, definitely. And he gets that. He's got that charisma more than any of the others have.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's they notice that clearly, which is why he basically becomes a regular eventually, but except for season 10. Oh, don't get me started. Anyway. But I liked how immediately Scully, all through this whole episode, really, for Scully, is very much her validating her role in the X-Files, because it's something they haven't really dealt with a lot in the episodes since early on, which is the whole idea that Scully is supposed to be there as their puppet.
Yeah.
And this is almost like the Smoking Man touching base through Skinner. You know, I always think that most of what Skinner says isn't him talking in this episode. It's the Smoking Man, really.
Yeah.
And he's just their vessel to communicate. And the Smoking Man's trying to touch base with Scully and go, right, well, remember your as. And she's like, well, not really. Not anymore, because I've seen enough. And she says something like, we won't be half as effective if we don't investigate in the way we do. Even though she's not ready to believe yet, it's proof that she sees the importance of the way Mulder works, which I really liked.
Yeah, no, it was a really nice moment, especially because you're getting towards the end of the season and you want to know that she's convinced, you know, because yeah. I mean, what we episode 21... Even in the early 90s, we all knew, you know, you only had a couple of episodes left till the end of the show. And obviously, we're not talking like we said before, like nowadays, you'd get to this point and go, don't know if this is coming back.
Yeah. But
you still got to go, I've got to wait 6 months to find out what happens after this, you know, the next few episodes. Mm. Please let her be all right. Please let her like this. Please let her want to stay.
Exactly. And that's really... her arc throughout the season, although, you know, with the X-Files in the first season, because it's procedural as much as it is anything else, you don't really, you know, I've said before, if they did the show now, it would be much more serialised from the beginning, probably, and it would have a lot more character stuff worked in, like season 10 did, really. But it is there, this whole idea that Scully is becoming more involved in his quest, and you get that in this scene. But beyond which, we're then straight into the idea of Toombs's... Well, appeal, I suppose.
Yeah, is it an appeal or just a hearing? Or
yeah.
I'm not quite sure. And this goes, I think, with what you were saying about not really knowing, you know, kind of glossing over the fact that they're about to let him go. They just kind of, they want to stick him in a room and have people tell us why they're letting him go. Because I don't quite know what's happening here.
Well, it's like a montage, isn't it, of all these law enforcement people who are going, well, you know, he's this, he's that, he's done this, he's okay. And you think, what is wrong with you people? What is wrong with you? Are you mad?
And then, I have to admit, when the woman said, you know, I don't know, if it's the opinion of this court or something, I'm like, court? Mm. You look like you've hired a, you know, local high school's gym. It doesn't look like a court at all.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't. It's not a court. I mean, yeah, it's just, no. And the Mulder's just all the way through sitting there going, that's bullshit. You know, while they're talking, he does look at his face, goes, he's bullshit. And then he basically says that, doesn't he?
He all but gets up on his hand and goes, this is bollocks.
It's bollocks. You know, he's then briefing, his slideshow briefing, which, you know, was a nice contrived way of getting Mulder's usual briefing into the story. But it was good because then it allows him to basically go off on a massive rant And they're going, contempt, Mulder, be quiet, and all this. And he's like, you do it, you release him, they'll kill again. And I just thought, it's brilliant. He just doesn't give a shit at that point. He's like, you're all mad. Don't let him go. What are you doing? And that built up really brilliantly. And I always remember, this episode really sticks in my memory because back in the 90s, I think it was for Sky or it was for BBC or something, there was lots of trailers for The X-Files. And I don't know if you remember, they used to do like season sort of recap thingies and they used to have lots of trailer pieces. I don't know if I'm describing this very well, but they used to use loads from Tombs. And yeah. I just remember lots of moments, like the whole bit where Mulder rants is one of them. There's lots of bits in Tombs that stick in my mind from that trailer, more than Squeeze, actually.
Yeah, see, I get the same kind of memories. Actually, what I remember is the constant adverts for the VHS tapes.
Yeah.
Which always have that bit from the chorus, if you release him, he will kill again.
I think that's what I'm thinking of, actually. Yeah, I think it is.
Every time, I can't remember what it is, what I was watching that had that trailer on, because I used to see that trailer a lot. And it's not like they advertised videos coming out on, you know, BBC One, which is, you know, pretty much, you know, we had five channels when I was a kid. But I always remember seeing that advert over and over and over again. And yeah, that bit from the court, there's lots of that court stuff in that advert.
I think they were on other tapes. I think because they used to, even in the tapes that came afterwards, so if you were like the Blessing Way Anasazi trio, they would still have trailers for the earlier ones as well. So it could be those as well. I don't know. But I fondly remember them. I do wish I had my VHS. I haven't got a VHS player, but I wish I had the tapes.
Yeah, I'm the same. I wish I still kept the tapes. I don't even think I've done anything decent with them, which is just ghastly to think that.
I know, same. I know. It's really sad. I'm sure they're on eBay. I'm sure some people sell them regularly. But yeah, Mulder obviously is shut down by these people. They don't want to know. They think he's balmy. And there was a great line when Scully comes out and basically says, do you know how you sounded? And he says, I don't care how it sounded, as long as it was the truth. And that's just pure Mulder. I loved that. That's just, there's lots of really good lines like that in this episode that are just really distill the characters down. And that's him. And equally, the bit where, at the end, when they get the verdict that Tombs is going, when you see that couple that are going to adopt, for want of a better word, Tombs, did you immediately think, they're dead? They are very dead.
Absolutely. Literally, they're like fostering this little monster. Like, really? this tiny old couple? Oh, for fuck's sake.
And you're like, Mulder says, doesn't he? He says he won't kill him. He won't be that obvious. He doesn't underestimate Tombs, which is the way of immediately turning to the audience and going, look, I know what you're thinking. They're obviously fodder. It's not going to happen. but they do get, and this goes back to the cheesiness, where the man says, the room at the back is small, but I'm sure you'll be able to squeeze in. And he goes, I'm sure. So come on.
It was like, oh, you just, my eyes rolled right into the back of my head. I was like, oh, come on, dude.
Oh, I laughed. I did laugh. It's proper cheesy. Again, going back to the whole, there's a little bit of a nod and a wink to this episode, to what's come before. Mulder does talk about, because he's talking to Scully about how they get proof, and he's talking about going back to the 30s and the 60s, the previous murders, and as well as talking about how she's saying, you know, the FBI are pressuring me, and he says, don't give in, and all this. He does say, there's no statute of limitation on murder. Now, I did think, is that true? Do you know?
I don't know. To be honest, my only knowledge on the statute of limitation on murder comes from that episode. I've always assumed there isn't. I suppose it would make sense for there not to be for something like that. I suppose the statute of limitation would be the person dying.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, never going to be more than like 100 years.
You'd assume so. I'm sure I've heard of like sort of loophole laws where people can't be prosecuted after such amount of time but I don't know. I'm sure it is, because you would think that even if you hear about these like Nazi war criminals, don't you, who are like 95 and they're getting, you know, put in jail or you know, what the fuck's the point?
shittiest life sentence ever. It's going to be like 4 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably true. It just made me wonder. So that's act one, basically. And then, so Tombs is out. He's immediately got a job, which seems to be quite a responsible job. He's got a van, which is a bit, it's like, okay, you've let him out, but give him a job where he gets the chance to lick his fingers after picking up dead birds.
I love the idea of the the clearly psychopathic dude that's just been released from a mental home, you give him a panel van.
Exactly.
You're just asking for trouble,
you really.
Really
are. Yeah. The panel van he totally would have used to kill the woman who he sees walking down the street. And obviously they do the whole, they turn to sepia, don't they? And then you just see her in blue. You know, there's a lot of blue used in this to actually accentuate the fact, liver. And but then he does that really, this is again an example of how tongue-in-cheek this episode is, because he does that walk, doesn't he? He just sort of menacingly walks, and he's got the... And then the music's going, swelling and everything, and you think, shit, she's in trouble. And then Mulder just walks in and goes, excuse me, I'm looking for my dog.
It is brilliant. And his face, actually, he has that moment where he goes, oh, shit, I need to stop.
Yeah.
You know, stop staring. And he just got his face, if he's just been caught dribbling. And his eye is brilliant. You know, oh, dude.
I need to stop my menacing walk in the middle of the day in a street there's lots of people on, which I clearly look weird.
Because apparently one person has spotted it, and that one person happens to be an FBI agent.
It's what Mulder says, that it's moments like this I'm convinced of Duchovny, because he said, I've lost my Norwegian elk hound. I use him to hunt moose. I think that. I really do think that's David Duchovny throwing lines in.
Yeah, just ad-libbing the entire thing.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. I'm sure David Duchovny did have a dog like that, I think, at the time. I can't remember if it was an elk hound, but it was something like that. So that could have been a nod to his dog.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, he did. I think his dog's name was Blue, and it was a dog like an elk hound or something like that, yeah. And he used to bring it on set and stuff. I may have got the breed wrong, but it was something like that. But obviously, the whole point of this is to show that Mulder is not letting go. You know, even though the court have freed Toombs, as far as they're concerned, he's innocent. Mulder's like, no, he's going to kill again. I'm going to watch him until he does.
It's not like I'm an FBI agent or anything, and I've got other things to do.
Yeah, not like I've got a whole case full of like unexplained files. It's fine. But then, as usual, while Mulder's off gallivanting and doing what the fuck he wants, Scully's actually trying to do some proper detective work.
Yeah.
And she then...
And keep Mulder out of trouble.
Yeah, basically. And she then goes back to the mysteriously Benjamin Button-like Frank Briggs, who I still can't figure his age out. I can't figure out how old this guy's meant to be.
No, we said this when we were talking about Squeeze, didn't we? Like, just give him the dude a wheelchair and a grey beard makes him an old person.
But he says to Scully, he says, oh, you know, if we don't catch him this time, by the time he comes back again, you'll be my age. And I'm like, well, you were a sheriff in 1933, which means you must have been born in about 1910 at the fucking early, at the earliest.
Yeah.
Right? Which means that you're now about 83, which would mean that you think at that time, Scully's 54. It's like, does she look 54? It's just like, come on. Whoever was writing this did not get this right at all, these dates. It's really weird. I don't understand how they didn't stop and go, well, what?
It is a weird thing to not get right. I mean, the attention to detail, obviously, especially in the first season, has been a bit up and down, but that one guy that they've messed with for two episodes, you've got no clue as to what's going on with it.
I just don't understand how you get that wrong. But it's a nitpick, but it just gets me, because I'm like, it's easy to solve. But the whole idea of going back to the early killings in the 1930s to try and prove Toombs' guilt now, I like that. I think that's a really good way, a very X-Filesy way of doing it, actually, going back to the beginning.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. This was the bigger problem. Once you watch it as a separate episode, not as the second half of a longer thing, you suddenly go, well, hold on. You know, why wasn't this apparently always missing fifth body brought up 20 episodes ago?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why didn't you mention it then?
Yeah, it's a bit contrived, isn't it, to go, oh, there was actually quite a big part of this case that I didn't mention. Here you go.
And I just happen to have random body parts in my house now.
Yeah, have a look at this liver or whatever it is. There you go. Well, could you have given me this fucking 2 years ago? Like 17 episodes ago, mate, so I could have proven this and kept him in jail.
It's these are the bizarre leaps I was talking about earlier. Like, you get this, you go, well, hold on, you don't know where you're going with this, so I'm just going to start adding bits in and bollocks to the continuity. You know, you can't get away with that because we see you.
We fucking see you. It is a bit contrived as well. When they go to the old plant and they're looking around, and Briggs goes off on his travels on his wheelchair. Did I miss something, or how did he know that was under there?
But this is what I mean. This is the worst part of it as well. He just suddenly, literally sitting there, da 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 da. I'm going to go off for a wander, roll away. Oh, look, it's here. What? Is there a road sign? Is there, an X that you've rolled over? I don't. Did I slip into a coma at some point while you were explaining how you knew it was here?
Well, good, because I'm glad, because I thought, have I missed something crucial here? So I'm glad you've said this, because...
No, the writers did. Absolutely.
Because not like 2 minutes ago, Scully is talking to him about ground-penetrating radar and how that can give you an educated guess as to where something is. And then he rolls away, and then he goes, found it.
Apparently someone just mentioning ground-penetrating radar suddenly puts it in his wheelchair wheels, and now he can see into the floor with his chair.
How the fuck does he become Professor X straight away? It's like...
It's absolutely bizarre. I don't know how they got to that.
No, I don't either. It's weird. And I'm glad. I feel validated now, because I really thought I'd missed something. So, good. Yeah. And this is part of the why it's not as good as Squeeze, because Squeeze had a lot more, it connected up, it had a better continuity within itself. This is a bit like, oh, well, let's just do this, oh, let's go there, oh, there's this. It is a bit like that, Tombs, just to put it all together.
That bit was probably, I don't remember getting particularly angry about it, I did yesterday when I was watching it. I don't remember getting particularly angry about it when I was watching it before, but it does seem like the kind of thing I would have happily forgiven, again, if it hadn't been for the fact that I was watching what is essentially an hour and a half long episode.
Yeah, yeah.
When you watch it on tape, it's just one go. So the missing Kate, the missing person and the body part and that, there's not a massive jump between I should have given you this, back in October. Now it's just, it was 20 minutes ago. Yeah. So that bit wouldn't have been quite so jarring. And then the wandering off with, the suddenly magic wheelchair.
Yeah,
I would have just let it go. But now watching it as its own separate episode, you go, oh, fuck off.
Well, yeah, what is that? What are you doing? it's a bit of a leap. It is a bit of a leap. So while all that's going on, Mulder's still on Toomsy's trail, and he's decided to attack a bald businessman. So he follows him home to his family, starts coming up the toilet.
Well, let's be fair. Did you see that the shoulder pads in that dude's coat? That dude deserves to have his liver ripped out, man.
I know, they were weird. It was like, that was an 80s holdover, that is, to the 90s, big time.
It looked like someone had stuck a crucifix in the back of his jacket. It was holding his arms up.
That would have been a twist if he turned out to be like the reincarnated Jesus.
or just, the Highlander when he's kicked out of his village.
If Doug Hutchinson got his way, they probably would have put that in his script, to be fair. Even though he wanted to have everyone immortal. There can be only one, Tombs.
But yeah, those were some shoulder pads, they man. I watched that with, Jesus Christ, they're taking up my entire TV.
It's true. You've got. I think Mulder keeping tabs on Tombs and tracking him is a very Mulder thing to do. And going off book and... this whole sequence is, you kind of know where it's going to end up. You kind of know that those people are going to be okay because Mulder's outside. You're pretty much certain it's not going to end up in death. I mean, I did all the way through. I was thinking, I understand the sequence. I understand what it's doing. It's the whole home invasion fear thing and, coming into someone's house in a horrible way, coming up the loo and things like that. I get that. But we know that it's not going to happen because the whole point of this is Mulder thwarting Tombs and trying to, because he says at the beginning, doesn't he? He's only got to get one more kill. Yeah. So the whole point of this episode is Mulder trying to prevent him getting that one more kill so he can go off and hibernate. So it does sap a little bit of the tension, I think, out of that scene.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not a... There's no edge of the seat moment like there was with some of the other moments in Squeeze. There's no, this is going to happen. And the problem is, again, you're watching an early to mid-90s show, in 2016. It's got all the tropes of an early to mid-90s show, hasn't it? So it's going to be... Oh, he's going to get there just in time, and there's going to be an open window. And yeah, we all know that. Mm. And the coming up the toilet thing, I'm all for the Squeeze thing, and it was pretty scary, but surely that dude would have drowned by now.
Unless he can breathe underwater or something, but yeah, there's no evidence of that.
And what the fuck is going on in their pipes for the water to come up green?
I know, well, yeah, I thought that. I mean, even having someone in there like that, why would it be green?
Someone needs to inspect their next bowel movement.
I was going to say.
It's pretty grim.
Whatever they're having for dinner, it's not working. Yeah. He got the point across, but...
But again, it was more contrived than it needed to be.
It was, to get that point across. I did feel for Scully when she spent ages doing all that with detective work. She's put together the idea that the person inside that, you know, casting that concrete is more than likely the person who went missing, who Toombs would have killed, all this. And she turns up and she goes to Mulder's stakeout and she goes, there you go, I've done all that. And he goes, it's not enough. Just gives it back.
It's really shit, isn't it? You might as well just lob that out the window. Go and try harder next time.
Fuck you, Scully. It's like, she, there's a little look on her face, actually, where she sort of goes, oh, okay. I was like, you poor woman. You've been working far harder than he has. He's just been sitting there, as he says, fucking listening to loads of radio shows for hours. And you've been out doing... I thought, oh, you poor woman. You know, because he's oblivious. It's his lack of social skills again, Mulder. He's oblivious. Yeah. You know, he should have turned around and gone, that's really good, but, you know, he should have done that and not go, no, fucking shit.
Oh, I do love the look on her face, because it's like, you know, we've all, boss does that, no, that's just not good enough. And you're looking at, motherfucker.
Yeah, I've spent ages on this. What are you talking about?
That took me weeks. Locked it in the bin.
It's a shame. But it does lead to one of the best, well, probably the best scene in the entire episode, actually, which is the scene, well, the famous scene where she goes to call him Fox, and he goes, I even made my parents call me Mulder, you know, which we've talked about before on this show. But it's a nicely written scene where they're talking about the commitment to each other, you know, and it underscores how far they've come, really, about, you know, there's that little bit of jokey flirtation in there, but it is very much, you know, Mulder always sort of, when they gets too deep most of the time, he'll come out with a joke. And he does that, but it is that whole thing where she says, I wouldn't put myself on the line for anyone but you. And it's a little bit of a, there's a little bit of a shipper moment there where they just look at each other a little bit. There hasn't been much of that until now. And this is one of the first instances of it.
Yeah, it's one of those moments again, isn't it? Because we're getting towards the end of the season and, you know, I think it's, they know how they're going to end the season. You know, obviously, we know how the season ends now, but they know that they've got to concentrate more on the conspiracy stuff towards the end of the season. So this point here will be a good time to start fanning the flames of all those water cooler moments. Mm. You know, for the next couple of months, just to keep the interest going under will they, won't they, will they, won't they. You know, it's a really, I really like this moment, actually, you know, because like you say, he, you know, Mulder always comes out with the joke when things are getting a little bit too real. And that's a really cool trait of his. But at the same time, you know, she throws the joke back at him as well in this.
That's true. That's
true. In this little moment, the thing with the root beer and that. It's a really nice moment where she like looks at him and goes, like, yeah, I can play your game as well.
Yeah.
But I do like the Fox thing. I like, maybe not a, well, we know it's not at this point, it's not a romantic thing, but it is a friendly thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She's trying to go, you know, I'm your mate, it's all right. You know,
exactly, yeah, yeah.
And I really, that's a really cool moment for the whole season, actually. It's one of my favourite moments from the season.
Definitely. It really does show the character work underneath. And like you say, how far they've come. So it's good. It's good that you get that in there. And that's what keeps Toombs with a bit more depth than it would have had, I think. Because there are moments that are bubbling away with character stuff. You know, not massively, but it is there. And I think it makes the episode a bit better than it perhaps would have been otherwise. So after this, you get the little bit of cunning on Toombs' part, because Toombs presumably goes, right, I'm not going to be able to kill anyone because he's not going anywhere. I can't kill Mulder because that means obviously it's me. What do I do? So then he cleverly tries to frame him, doesn't he? And I think this is the first time we ever see Mulder's apartment. I think
you're right.
I might be wrong. And obviously Toombs comes in and sneaks his way in while Mulder's fallen asleep watching the original Fly. Yes. And I liked how they used the music, actually, from that movie on the TV to sort of build up the tension in that scene. Yeah. That was good. They worked that well.
Yeah, that was a really well-planned moment, actually. It wasn't until I watched it yesterday, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I mean, it must be a few years since I've watched Toombs. or at least paid attention while I was watching it, which is kind of where the issue is when you binge. By the time you get this far into a season, you're like, oh God, I'm getting tired now.
Yeah.
So I wonder if I just usually just I get to this point, and while I'm sitting and watching and enjoying, I'm maybe not concentrating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was a very cool moment when I spotted it. I was like, oh, actually, I like that. That's been done really, really well.
Yeah, it was. And it obviously helps get to the point where Mulder's in jeopardy from the law enforcement. Although they don't really do much with this, do they? You know, they kind of just put him. It's more, the whole point of this, I think, is more to get that scene with Skinner. Because it then puts Mulder back in the FBI, and it gives Skinner, or the Smoking Man, however you want to interpret this, it gives him the chance to actually sort of go, well, you fucked up, mate, haven't you? Which means I've got a good reason to shut you down now, you know, or I might have. And it's like, this scene is great for several reasons at the FBI, because on the one hand, you've got Skinner being quite bullying towards Mulder and the X-Files, but then Scully, in a brilliant little bit of gameplay, she bats for him and she covers for him, lying through her teeth. But she covers for him, knowing full, and then she says very innocently, well, I imagine you put the same faith in me as I do in you. And I was like, you clever little cow, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because he's got nowhere to go with that, because they're still trying to keep Scully on side.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then he kind of then, when Scully goes, he's kind of more like, he thinks, right, how do I do this now? So he tries to become matey, doesn't he, with Mulder?
Yeah.
And he goes, look, Fox. And that's where we get the second Fox.
He doesn't correct Skinner, though, does he?
No. Because he knows he's full of shit, you see. This is the thing. Skinner's like there going, look, he tries to appeal to Mulder's ego, and the simple fact is Mulder doesn't have an ego, and that's why he's Mulder. No. And it's that whole thing of, look, you were one of the best, you know, it's gone a bit wrong, you've gone into the X-Files, is it right for you? You know, is this right for your career and your sanity? And Mulder then just goes, thanks for your concern. Just shuts him down.
Doesn't he? He has the exact same conversation with Robert Patrick like 8 years down the line as well.
Yeah. I think it's a really cleverly written scene, because then Skinner switches straight away when he realises he can't manipulate Mulder that way. And Mulder's like, yep, you're full of shit. I'm just going to agree. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a really clever. And then you've got Smoking Man in the background watching it all, trying to control it all. And I thought it was very good. It's a very good first instance of all the game playing that goes on.
Yeah, it's a good little point where you can almost, if you looked closely, you can see strings in the in Smoking Man's hand, can't you?
Yeah.
And his hand up Skinner's ass. But I do like this point with Skinner, and like you say, the switching from bad guy to trying to be good guy to, oh, just fuck off then. Just get out.
I can't get what I need from you. Which ultimately is for Mulder really to have to give up the X-Files. That's kind of what they're trying to do. They're trying to get Scully to, firstly, to admit, this is all a load of bollocks. Here's your justification to shut him down, which she won't do. And then they're trying to either use Mulder to sort of go, right, well, you fucked up because you've hurt Toombs or whatever. You've got to jack it in. Or then go, is this, well, maybe this isn't right for you. And try to convince him to give it up. Because, and they won't do it. You know, Mulder and Scully are like, nope, we're not playing this game. And I just think that's very good. And you don't always notice it in this episode. That's the thing. When people think of Toombs, they think of all the Toombs stuff. They forget that there's this little under stuff going on, which is really good.
Yeah, and it's a nice balance, isn't it, between the monster and Toombs stuff and the extra character stuff, which, again, they're now pushing at this point in the season. It's a lovely little balance. Again, I don't think I've ever really spotted before. I've watched it for recording tonight.
So then we're building up towards the end now, in which Toombs finally goes, oh, fuck it, I can't get my liver anywhere else. Monty, it's you. And then he just does him in. You think, oh, well, you've had this coming, mate. You really have. Yeah. All through this episode, you've been a gullible shit.
The only dude more deserving than shoulder pad dude.
Exactly, yeah. And again, I always remember from the trailer, the bit where Toombs is slowly closing the door and Monty goes, what are you doing, Eugene? Eugene?
Yeah.
Eugene? And the door closed. I always remember
that. Weird. It's really bizarre, though, isn't it? It's like, you don't sound concerned that this guy's going to kill you. You sound like you're wondering if he's going to sexually molest you. You, if you survive this, you need a new career, mate.
Yeah, definitely. But oh dear, no, you don't. He's the one. He gets the liver, and then we build to the climax, which he brings in Glenn Morgan's elevator, escalator, I should say, escalator idea. Quite a traditional sort of monster ending where, you know, they're going into the bowels of this escalator and, you know, hunting out Toombs's nest. And then you get the very icky, you know, final confrontation where, you know, he bursts through and he goes, yeah. Which, interestingly enough, Dog Hutchinson, because he's loopy, refused to do with any clothes on. Because they all went, well, you know, you can wear some clothes. He was like, no, I'm doing it nude because that's more in touch with the character.
It's the X-Files. You don't need to go method for the X-Files.
I know. He's bonkers. And so he said they covered me in syrup and I basically was sticking to the walls. He said it was...
See, yeah. Actually, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound like method. It sounds like, yeah, he was getting off on
that. I think he was, yeah. He's an odd one, isn't he? And then you've got David Duchovny, who apparently didn't relish the idea of going down into a sweaty little corridor with a naked man.
Well, you know, who would?
Exactly. Well, yeah. And David Nutter apparently went, look, if that's got you a bit afraid, that's good, because channel that into Toombs. He was like, just be afraid of that. So, it worked. And, of course, Toombs gets sucked into the elevator and he's dead. Which, you know, would have divided opinion, I suppose, as to whether or not, you know, I think for years people kind of went, oh, might Toombs come back? And, you know, even I've kind of thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if we get, like, season 15 in 2023 and we get a Toombs sequel, part three? I kind of think that would be quite funny when you've got a much older Doug Hutchinson.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'd work, actually, having said that. And then you get two real sort of small tag scenes, don't you, at the end, which are not really about Toombs, but they're setting up the future.
Well, they're setting up what's to come in the next couple of episodes, aren't they?
So firstly, you've got Smoking Man talking for the first time when Skinner gets the case file on Toombs and he says, do you believe them? And Smoking Man goes, of course I do. Which is an odd exchange, but I read it as, I think that's the first time we see Skinner properly. Because there's a little bit of a hint that he's not quite sure about everything that's going on. And when he's on his own with Smoking Man, he's a lot more like, well, what are they up to? What do you think? Which is, all through, he seemed very sure that he wants them out, that they're no good, that the X-Files is shit. And I don't think he ever thought that. I think that he had to do what he had to do. And I think that's a little flicker of the real guy.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you also get this impression that, and it is, like I say, it's a nice setup, actually. You have the Smoking Man. Of course I believe them. Yeah. Because, mate, you have got no idea some of the shit I've seen.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, you get a nice little moment where you go, that dude has seen some shit.
Yeah, he's like, this is nothing, mate. This is the tip of the iceberg.
It's literally like a three-word setup for everything to come from the Smoking Man.
That is true. There was a joke on set, apparently, that when they hired William B. Davis to play it, the character, they joked that they didn't even know if he could talk. and then when he did, they were like, oh, he's actually really good. And they kept him on. But and obviously, since now, apart from the Erlenmeyer flask, which is the next time we briefly see him in the season finale, he does then speak pretty much in every successive episode. He properly becomes a character season two onwards, which is cool. But we then get the final little tag scene, which is Mulder deciding. Again, this is another one of those bits of dialogue, a bit like Briggs earlier, where you go, well, where's this come from? You know, Mulder going, I think we're going to shut us down. This is the end. It's like, well, I don't know how you've quite got there, because that's I know what the setup was with Skinner and the Smoking Man and everything, but it just seems a little bit like too much of an instant leap, you know.
He's taken a massive leap, hasn't he? From you need to be a bit careful to, oh shit, they're going to shut us down.
Yeah.
You know, it's a massive jump.
And I don't know about that. And it's, again, another example of some of the forced plotting a little bit, I think, this episode has. So, yeah, that's Toombs. I think, like you, a solid sequel, but not quite up to Squeeze for me.
No. Needs to be watched right after Squeeze, not 5 months and 20 episodes later. too much has happened between then and now, and on its own as a standalone episode, no, it's nowhere close to Squeeze, which is a real shame.
I think with all the sequels that the X-Files did, and it didn't do that many, you know, it did sequels for its most famous, probably its three most famous monsters, didn't it? It did Tombs, it did Donnie Faster, the Death Fetishist, and then it did Pusher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in all cases, the successive episodes were not as good. Not necessarily bad, but not nearly as good as the originals. And I think that's... Yeah. It's the classic sequel problem, isn't it? You know, we get this in movies all the time. And it's the same difference, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. You know, writers and directors and studios, you know, have gone, oh, the guys like this character. Let's bring it back, you know. Ratings, man. And...
Yeah.
You know, it never quite hits the highs of the original.
Very, very rarely do you get an Empire Strikes Back. But then the thing with that is that in the case of something like Empire Strikes Back, to use the analogy, that's part of a trilogy that's always been planned. Whereas this, when they wrote Squeeze, they didn't plan to bring him back. You know, it was one and done. Then everyone loved him. And so when you do that, and it was the same with the others, you know, nobody knew that Pusher or Donnie Faster was going to be a massive success. And then later on, seasons later, they bring them back in those cases. It's a potluck, really.
And yet we still don't get a sequel with the Peacocks.
Oh, yes, controversial.
I'm not bitter about that at all.
Not in the least. Okay, next up, we're going to move... We're not going to do our usual Do You Believe In, because we've done that, because it's Tombs again. So we're going to just finish up, and we're going to go straight into the quiz. The X quiz. Oh. Now, you are in the privileged position of being top of the leaderboard. So, now you get to see if you can equal your score and keep this like... Your challenge now is to keep getting 6-on-6.
Well, the problem is, and this has got nothing to do with the fact that I got 6 previously and I thought I don't have to put any effort in, is that we're recording at the end of a very busy week and I've only managed to watch the episodes a couple of times, but I had to do work while I was doing it, so I didn't actually write any notes. So I think I'm going to be back to, you know, 2s and 3s if I'm really lucky.
We'll see. You could be playing... you know, underplaying this, but we'll see. Okay. Are you ready then for five questions and a quote on Tombs?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Question one. Name the Baltimore Sanitarium, or Sanatorium, that Tombs has been kept since Squeeze.
Oh, holy crap. You know what? I watched the episode twice and I looked at it and went, I should write it down because I'm not going to remember that. Shady Pines or something, I don't know.
No, but funnily enough, that's not too far away from the name of Briggs' retirement home.
Oh, bollocks, yeah, the Briggs' retirement home. It was like Shady Acres or something.
Yeah, I think it was Shady Acres or something like that. Or Little Acres or something. In this case, it's Druid
Hill. No, I don't remember.
For the sanitarium.
Druid Hill, yes.
Druid Hill. Okay, question two. Give me the case solution percentage that Scully tells Skinner the X-Files gets.
Oh wow, that is a hardcore question.
It's
74.
I'm going to give you that because it's 75, and I think that's basically a point. Yeah, so 3/4 of case percentage they get, which is pretty good, you know.
That's very good.
Yeah. Okay, so you're off the grid, number one. Okay, question three. What did Mulder listen to while on his stakeout? Now, he says 3 things, but I'll give you a point if you can get one of them.
Oh, crap. No. No, I can't remember any of them.
Okay. he says, I've watched a Phillies game, an Areas game, and 4 hours of Bar Bar Booey. At which point I got up and had a walk. Okay, question 4. What does Scully jokingly claim the sandwich she gives him afterwards is? So after they talk about that.
Liverburst.
Which did make me laugh.
That was a good one, actually. I like that.
That was a good line. Okay, question 5. What does Mulder recommend Scully listens to on her stakeout before he leaves her?
No, not a clue.
Okay, it's 11:30, station 790, Pete Rhodes late night sports radio show.
Yeah.
And then she goes, wouldn't miss it for the world.
I knew it was a sport something. I just couldn't remember what the bloody hell it was.
You should have said that. I might give you a point. Okay, so you've got 2 out of 5, but you might be able to get 3 if you get the quote. So I think you'll get this, actually. Quote and who said it. If there's an iced tea in that bag, it could be love.
It's Mulder Scully in the car in the steakhouse.
Yeah, which he says root beer. So yeah, 3 on 6. That's not bad.
There you go. See, I'm back to my average. Absolutely a flash in the pan.
The Lazarus miracle was was a one-off. So yeah, that's it then this week. We've looked at our first sequel in The X-Files. We've said goodbye to Toombs, one of the most iconic villains. And now it's time to say goodbye to you, Andrew. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on again. It's been very, very cool.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You'll be back next week for Born Again. But until then, where can we find you online?
So I tend to just spend all my time ranting and raving and moaning about many and varied things on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411, where I also post all the reviews and podcasts and things I do for Fail Critics and for you.
Awesome. Yes, on Pick a Flick. Yes, the other Black Hole Media podcast. Yeah, so do check him out on all those areas. And check us out, yeah, on Black Hole Media at Black Hole Media on Twitter. And you can obviously find the X-Cast in there at the X_cast on Twitter. And we're on Facebook at the X-Cast. And we've got our website in a bit better shape now. So it's at www.blackholepodcast.com. where it's a much nicer, simpler WordPress thing going on. So you can just access all the episodes on there, or download them if you want to, or stream them. So, and, you know, please do, if you haven't subscribed to us on iTunes, please do, and leave us a review, that'd be lovely. So, yes, we'll be back next week for Born Again, and we'll see you next time, guys. But remember, as always, trust no one.